Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. This is a podcast where we talk to successful entrepreneurs about their journey from having an idea to eventually creating a business, a product that has a real impact on the world. And today we're super excited to talk to serial entrepreneurs, Colin McIntosh. He started a company called Sheets and Giggles, but he's also started several other businesses. So can't wait to dig in and learn about your journey. Welcome to the podcast, Colin.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to chatting.
Awesome. So before we jump into the business stuff, tell us a little bit about family life, dogs, hobbies. What do you do when you're not working, if you have any time left?
I'm a pretty eclectic guy, and I've got unmedicated ADHD, so I do a lot of things. I love my family, my niece and nephew. They're 8 and 6 years old, and I play a lot of baseball with my nephew in the front yard. I'll go to bars and play video games with my guy friends all night. I love kayaking, whitewater rafting, camping, hiking. Spent the last 10 years in Denver, and so just love the outdoors and the American Southwest. Road trips with my wife to the Grand Canyon, international travel. And I love, my wife and I do a park cleanup every Sunday. So we go down to a local park down here and we'll pick up trash all day. And that's super cathartic. I love doing that. And it's just incredible how much litter you can pick up in an hour or two.
That's amazing.
And yeah, so I'm, you know, a lot of different interests. And I grew up in South Florida. I currently live in Miami. I just moved back after 17 years gone after high school. So it feels very weird to move back to my home after almost two decades. Lot of changes down here in South Florida. My folks are still together after 42 years. I've got an older sister and I'm married with no kids.
Well, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing. So you're saying the ADHD is part of a driver to that you just like to be busy all the time?
My wife calls it always doing, having doing. like I always have something that I'm doing. And it's just it's a superpower for founders. You know, I'm able to context switch and I enjoy diving into hyper-focus sessions and when I can get started. And then other days it can be a blocker, obviously, in terms of like having the flow of my day that I want. But yeah, I mean, usually a lot of people with ADHD also have like a really evening circadian clock. And so right around 9 or 10 o'clock at night, every night, I get this huge burst of creative energy and I'll get done everything I need to get done for Sheets and Giggles. And then often I'll work till 3, 4 in the morning, on, you know, a passion project or a side project or something or other that I'm tinkering with. And that's where my creative outlets come from.
That's great. So were you, did you grow up in an entrepreneurial family? Was this in your blood or did it come later in life?
Kind of. My parents, I guess, were both entrepreneurs technically. But you wouldn't really think of them as like the classic entrepreneur. My mom was a court reporter who went back to Chinese medical school when she was 35, I think, and she opened up her practice when she was 38 or 39. So she opened up her own practice and has been operating that practice now for about 25 years. And then my dad was a lawyer who quit and started his own law firm, I believe in 1989 is the year he incorporated his law firm, maybe 88, I can't remember. And so my earliest memories of my father are him coming back from work at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, waking up early, getting out of the house by 5 a.m. And, you know, I would, despite that, we would spend so much time together. You know, I would wait for him to come home and I'd hear the garage door open and I would run downstairs and I would out of my bed. My mom would pretend to be mad at me, but I would want to have dinner with my dad. So he would have dinner. I would have like an applesauce and I would talk to him about his business, his challenges, the people, the cases, So I really enjoyed that time with my dad, and then it was just very natural for me for my parents to be the boss, like that was very normalized for me as like people run their own companies.
Great. So did you, what was your first business? Was it Sheets and Giggles, or did you do other things before that?
Sheets and Giggles was technically the first time that I was ever a founder. Before that, I've had a weird career. So I started Sheets and Giggles when I was 27, about 5 years out of college. And in those 5 years, I had started my career at the world's largest hedge fund, Bridgewater Associates in Connecticut. I got fired in 5 months. best thing that ever happened to me. And I ended up becoming a recruiter at the company that hired me there. So that was really ironic. I became a recruiter for an agency that hired for them, and banks and startups. And that was when I really fell in love with recruiting. I fell in love with helping people get this incredible feeling of helping someone find a new job is so intoxicating. And I love that so much. And I was working with startups as well. One of my startup clients in Seattle, was hiring and into a business development role, and I was the recruiter for the role. And I was putting forth a few candidates, and no one was really hitting. And I'll never forget the CEO was like, "No, we need somebody young," and which is illegal, by the way, to say. "We need somebody dynamic and like somebody who's talkative and can go out to events and be charismatic. Colin, you'd be really good for this role." And I was like, "Oh yeah." And so I flew out to Seattle. I moved out there in 2014. Great way to leave a company as a recruiter, hiring yourself at one of your clients,
Brilliant.
everybody gets paid. And then I ended up recruiting for them, doing business development for them for a while. I got fired from that job because the CEO ended up being total lunatic. That's a long story. But I stood up to him one day and was let go about 10 months after I moved out there.
Oh no.
And then I really had a stroke of luck where a friend of mine in summer 2015, I had helped her to write a business plan for this startup called Revelar. And it was a wearable tech product, kind of like a Fitbit, but if you pressed it, it would send out an emergency alert and live location data to your friends and family. And it was for young women, for sexual assault and violence. And I had written the business plan when I was 23 over my kitchen table with my friend Jackie. And 2 years went by and she did a Kickstarter. She raised a little bit of money and she got into a program called Techstars. And Techstars is something that I was familiar with, having been a recruiter. I was really excited by the opportunity to do Techstars with her. And so I ended up dropping everything and driving 20 hours from Seattle to Boulder, summer 2015. We did that for about 2.5 years. We raised a few million dollars. We launched a product nationwide at Brookstone, Target, Best Buy, a bunch of other great retailers. And I was in charge of all of that marketing and business development. And then unfortunately, we had a supply chain breakdown and ended up having to close up shop very suddenly, right before holiday 2017. So I got laid off from that job, third time I'd been fired or laid off in my career and in 5 years. And so at that point, I said, "All right, I got to be my own boss." And I took what I learned from that job and started Cheese and Giggles.
That's awesome. Well,
Long
thank you for
story.
sharing that. I think
Sorry.
it's so important to hear because so many people, we talked about that a little earlier. It's when you read Inc. magazine or whatever, these success stories
Oh,
are
yeah.
so clear, and it's lovely to hear that, you've been fired 3 times, and sometimes the best that happened to you. And I know what, my first startup was a .com, and it failed miserably, and I had to let everybody go. And
Awful.
it's terrible at the time, but then you move on and you learn from it. And
That's all you can do is you have to not be afraid of failure and you have to be willing to put yourself out there. And I often tell my startup friends and founders, people ask me like, what's my one piece of advice for startups or whatever? And I always say like, don't make your company your entire personality, because companies doing a business is so fucking hard. And like building a business is the hardest thing in the world. And so many things can happen. Like 18 months after I shipped my first box, COVID happened. The whole world changed on a dime. Greatest supply chain crisis in 100 years. I didn't, my costs went up by 50%. Freight tripled. You couldn't get a container to save your life. And it's like you can do everything right and still get punched in the mouth from something that you totally don't anticipate. So I tell my founder friends and the people I mentor, I say, just make sure that like when you're posting on social media, Instagram, LinkedIn, when you're introducing yourself to people, you must be more than just your business. Like you have to be a person, because if your business fails, if your whole identity is wrapped up in the corp, then it feels like you failed as well. And I think that that's not true. Like a business is a fictional entity on paper. You are a human being, and there's a big difference.
Yeah, that's really great advice. Yeah, my first failure was that was hard because it had become big part of my identity. You know, you were the startup guy and you're going to make a bunch of money. You're basically counting it already, thinking about all the shit you were going to buy once you got it, and then it just disappeared
Poof.
overnight, basically. Awesome. So let's talk Sheets and Giggles. How did that start? What a great name, by the way.
Thank you. I would say that it started 80% because of the name. I also, you'll probably find this refreshing. I don't have like a gussied up after the fact startup founder story. I'm not like, I was always obsessed with Sheets and I was always obsessed with sleeping. And one of my competitors is like, my wife and I stayed in a hotel and we loved the sheets. And then we Googled them and they were $300. And we were like, oh, there has to be a better way. I'm like, that no, that's not true. That can't possibly be. Like, you found a manufacturing partner where you could produce a product at a 90% gross margin. You went to market during the 2010s D2C boom. You got out in front of everybody else in terms of Facebook and Instagram ads, and you built a $100 million business, bro. Go own it. Go tell people how great it was that you did that. Instead, it's like they have to have this very lofty, aspirational thing because otherwise, I think they think it's harmful for the brand to just be like, we had a great business model. But for me, it's even dumber. I was watching War Dogs with Miles Teller and Jonah Hill. It's such a silly founder story. It's like a 7 out of 10 movie. It's pretty funny. I think 2016 it came out.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And if you've seen it, Miles Teller's character is selling sheets out of the back of his pickup truck.
Oh, yeah, I
And
forgot
he
about that.
can't, the retirement homes, no one's buying his sheets. So he ends up having to burn all the inventory in the middle of the movie and becomes a weapons dealer. And I turn to my ex and I go, the girl I was dating at the time, and I said, this is ridiculous. He didn't do any go-to-market strategy. He doesn't understand his pricing, his demographics. He's not propositioning the product well. You know what? Pause the movie. And I wrote a business plan for a bed sheets company that night. And I swear to goodness, I did not finish that movie until 8 years later. Last year, I watched it with my wife. And I was like, whoa, I never finished this movie. Like, I only ever watched the first half. And then I just paused it. And so whenever I write a business plan, I always think, what's a funny name for blank? I thought Sheets and Giggles was like, just came to me like a fever dream. And I could see exactly what I would do with it. It was very weird. I remember having like a very visual, like out of body experience where I was like, oh wow, and then I can do this, I can do this, I can put, you know, three men in bed together and avocado face masks, and we can have like circle saws in the bedroom, sawing logs. That's funny. Night owl, early bird, like all the different sleep is really cool. Sleep has it's such a human thing. Like, how many words do we have for walking, right? Walk, jaunt, strut, you know, jog, amber. You know, amble, like you could literally just like there's endless stroll and
Wonder.
wander, and the same thing goes for sleep. Is like sleep, everybody does it for 8 hours a day every day for their entire natural life. And so we have so many fun idioms about like sawing logs and early bird and night owl and midnight snack and you know, morning wood at one point, something, you know, like I had these designs that were ridiculous at one point. And so I saw the potential to have a really funny brand in a really boring space. And the business argument there, right, is it's a massive market. It's $15 billion marketplace. It's growing 10% year over year. It is highly fragmented. There's no market leader. There's no brand differentiation. There's no brand loyalty. There's no switching costs. And so I can pick people off by being, my hypothesis was, the most differentiated brand in the industry. And that's what we did.
And with a lot of humor, it sounds like,
Yes.
yeah.
Well, and so the brand name specifically, to give a lesson to your listeners, something that I'm trying to proselytize a little bit, is I have decided over the years there are four rules to a good brand name. Number one, it has to be spellable, shareable, and memorable. So it can't be cutesy misspellings or something that's not memorable, something that if somebody says, oh yeah, there was this great company, da da da, and somebody will not remember it after it's spoken to them. So that's number one, spellable, shareable, memorable. Rule number two is that it has to connote or denote what you do. Sheets and Giggles denotes what we do. We sell bed sheets. Casper connotes what they do. He's the friendly ghost. He comes out at night. He helps you have a better evening. So he has to connote or denote what you do. So when somebody hears your brand name, they kind of have an idea of what you're selling. Number three is that there has to be good SEO. So if you are telling somebody about your product or you advertise to them, you spend money getting your brand in front of them, if they search for your brand name, the last thing in the world you want is for them to find a competitor or somebody, something totally, non sequitur. And so that's number three is have good SEO. And then number four is have a .com because Americans do not buy from anything other than .coms. So you have to have a .com.
Yeah, that's great. Awesome advice.
Dot AI is starting to become more normalized. So, but from a consumer goods perspective, dot com.
Yeah, it brings certain street cred with it. I just love the fun aspect too, because it just makes the business so much funner, right? Because I bet you guys laugh every day and we come up with new videos and social posts and such.
Oh, we have so much fun. I have this idea for a video that I'm going to try to do with AI that I could not convince my team to let me spend money on over the last few years. But I sorry if this is offensive to anyone listening. I have this really funny bit idea about like what if Jesus didn't rise because he was sleeping in sheets and giggles. And if like his followers were like, it's day three, like let's open the tomb. And it's just like he's just snoring. And then it's just like Jesus? Like, and then, like what would be different throughout history? Like no crusades, like Constantinople probably never gets founded. Like there's a bunch of like different, funny things that you can do throughout history that like completely change. And I thought it would be a funny bit. So yeah, we have a lot of fun. It's a good time.
That's awesome. And that's, I admire brands like Liquid Death, for example, recently have done just an amazing job at, selling water in a can. And a lot of their success, I think, is about the content they create. That
It's just
it's
brand.
funny.
They are Liquid Death is, I think, if not the last, one of the last 100% pure brand plays with zero product differentiation. There is no difference between a Liquid Death, a LaCroix, a bubbly, a Kodak wa seltzer water, Sipho. Like, I love seltzer water. I'm a seltzer water connoisseur. I love fizzy water. And like, Liquid Death is like 350 a can. But they've got it at all the events, all the music festivals. They've got it, and it's like, I don't really understand what the appeal is because everyone knows it's water. It just looks cool. But their brand is like their marketers are at the top of the game. Like they're the best in the business.
Yeah, I saw an interview with him, or he has his own master class, and I highly recommend it because he talks about it. He hired actually comedians to work on,
Genius.
on his stuff. So let's go back to the outset. So you have the idea of Sheets and Giggles. You write the business plan halfway through a movie, and then what? Did you, go raise money? Did you start yourself?
Well, I figured very few people would be willing to give me money for a pun-based betting company as a 27-year-old first-time founder. So, when I say it out loud, it sounds kind of bad. But what I did was I said, okay, I'm gonna have to prove this out. And so crowdfunding became the very obvious target for me of like, okay, I can get a bunch of money to go to market, and I can prove the demand for this to raise more money to help me go to market. And so this was back in 2018, January 2nd, I think we launched the business officially. As you know, I started working on it, and we ended up, starting to prepare then for a May 1st crowdfunding launch. We ended up doing, I think, $284,000 for a crowdfunding campaign in 30
Wow,
days.
that's great.
Largest bedsheet betting Indiegogo of all time. I know that sounds funny, it's a funny qualifier, but there were two other betting companies that launched on the same day as us, May 1st, 2018.
Really?
And yes, and both of those companies, I think one raised 50,000 and the other raised 15,000. And so we raised 284. So
So what was your
that
secret? How did
oh,
you?
preparation. So that was so the so basically, it was from 2,000 customers approximately, like 2,400 customers actually. And the way that we did it was, think you have to break it down to its components. So if you want a $100,000 campaign, you need 30% of it on day one, so about $30,000. And if you want $30,000 and you have a $100 average order value, that's 300 customers. And so if you need 300 customers on day one, then you need an email list that will convert 300 customers. An email list convert at about 3%. And so if you need 300 customers at 3%, you need 10,000 emails in order to successfully do 300 customers, 30 grand, snowballing into a $100,000 campaign. So that's the math. It's very straightforward. And once you eliminate all the superfluous, like, okay, I don't need to think too much about pricing, I don't need to think too much about this or that, I need to think about how I'm going to gather 10,000 emails. Well, I need to set up landing pages with email capture. I need to have email flows set up so that way when I do email someone, they get a series of flows for me that get them ready for the crowdfunding launch. And then I need to advertise with compelling content in order to get them to be convinced to give me their email and trust some random dude with their email. And to my great surprise, we had lightning in a bottle. The brand completely took off. The logo was iconic. I might switch back to the old logo, honestly. It was calligraphy. Now it's a font, but I love the calligraphy. The font's more upscale, but the original calligraphy was like iconic. And that like initial landing page with like pillow fights and pizza in bed and dogs and video games and cigars and like we were sawing logs, like literally.
Cigars in bed.
Yeah, cigars in bed. I lit a dollar bill on fire and lit a cigar, and I called it the first dollar we ever burned. I got it framed over there actually. That just resonated with people. We ended up converting emails at 38%. So more than one in three people who hit our website was giving us their email, and then that even rose over the last few weeks to I think 44, 45%. We were gathering emails like crazy, and so I think we got 11,000 emails. We shut off the hose. I nurtured them over about 6 to 8 weeks of letting them know May 1st, May 1st, May 1st, get ready, May 1st. And sure enough, May 1st, 7 a.m., the campaign went live. We got our first customer within a second of me pushing it live. They were waiting to check out. And we ended up converting our email list at 4.5% times the 10,000 emails, $100 AOV. We had a $45,000 day one, like clockwork, and that snowballed into a $284,000 campaign. And that was, a lot of hard work, but not as hard as some might think. I think I spent a grand total of $15,000 on the campaign. And most of that went to, I think 3,000 went to video, 500 went to photography. I got a sweetheart deal from my photographer friend. All my friends were my models, obviously, my dog too. And then I think I spent 9,000 on advertisements, and then another, I think 2,500 on the agency I hired, plus a 10% success fee on the back end.
So 30 grand or so up front. to.
Like 15 grand up front and then like another 28 grand on the back end to the agency. But they did 6 months of work, right? They started working with me in February, and then we ended up wrapping up with post campaign logistics in like August. So they did 6 months of work, not a reasonable rate, $4,000 or $5,000 a month for an agency partner, when it's spread out. So yeah, it was super fair.
And they
And
were
they
they
were
an agency?
great. I'll shout out Will Russell Marketing. He's the only Kickstarter agency I would trust, Will
Okay,
Russell.
great. Thanks for sharing that. Awesome. So you get end up with 250 or something when all said and done. And then, did you have all the supply chain lined up and you were ready to pull the trigger? Or?
I mean, I went to there's something called Market Week, which is where all the major home textiles companies go in March and September every year in New York, and they meet and they schmooze. And I had meetings in March 2018 with a bunch of different manufacturers from all over the world, China, Vietnam, India, Turkey. And there were these folks in India that I started working with who I really respected, who I enjoyed meeting them, built a really close personal relationship with them. Over time, I ended up signing a pillowcase before I left. And I had all my questions answered about like minimum order quantities and what they needed me to do and costing and ethics and how they treated the workers and the factory conditions. They were LEED certified and all these other great certifications. And I ended up flying to India myself and seeing the factories myself a couple of months later. Totally state of the art, wonderful facilities. And that was I had it lined up, but I didn't spend any money. This is what I tell people: sell before you build. So I did not send them a dime. I needed to send them a deposit, right? I didn't send them a dime until the first week of the campaign was over, and we had already made $100,000 in pre-orders. And then I was like, okay, this is actually happening. Like, after 6 to 9 months of hard work getting here, this is real. We have customers, send the wire. And then we started production first week of May, and we shipped our first unit October 1st. So it took what, September, August, July, June, took about 5 months to get the product shipped out to people.
And what was that first SKU that you launched with?
We launched 5 colors of bed sheets in 7 sizes, which I regret. I would have only done 4 or 5 sizes at the beginning. But we did twin through split king, and we had 5 colors that were chosen by our audience of the 5 highest ranking colors in our surveys: white, gray, purple, blue, and navy. Again, decisions I would have done differently. But they were bold colors, man. They were beautiful. I adored our initial colors. They were so strikingly different than any other bed sheets in the business. I really want to get back to that, actually. It's really hard to go from niche to mass market because you can't keep all the SKUs that you want, and you have to make hard decisions about cutting lower velocity items. But at one point we had just the most gorgeous, dripping, bold, vibrant, saturated colors you've ever seen. And I liked that because you couldn't get them from anywhere else, but it was just so hard to like lose all those sales from people who were like, I want pastel colors. Like, and it's like, they were non-starters for a lot of people. So that was hard. But yeah,
But it helped put you on the map. It helped
put me on
you
the map.
differentiate
And
and
then we expanded. We had duvet covers. No, sorry, we had pillowcases and comforters at launch. I did something clever. And even though I had pillowcases and comforters, I pulled back the comforters from day one launch. I just said sheets and pillowcases. And then after we hit $100,000, I said, good news, we've hit $100,000. We now have the ability to do comforters. Never mind, the comforters were already ordered. But now we have, and then so we emailed the people who bought the sheets already. They're your best set, place for more revenue. And a ton of them ordered comforters. Then we got to 150K or 175 or whatever. And it was like, hey, now we have enough to do duvet covers for your comforter. And so then we did the duvet covers. And so really, like, that was what kept us going from like, and it gives you that momentum to rejuice you back in the crowdfunding algorithm where you get back on the homepage of Indiegogo and you get that further discoverability. So you want to really hit those resell points with your customers.
That's brilliant. That's great. So this was 2019 then, October that you started.
2018 and then
18.
2019, went through Techstars, hired some of our first people. We scaled, I think, 4x year over year from 2018 to 2019. And then I think again 4x till 2020. Made the Inc. 5000, company number 309 on the fastest growing private companies in America in 2022, for our growth rate through 2021. Yeah, we had our first, we shipped our first box October 1st, 2018, and we hit $1 million in monthly sales November 2020. So it was a very meteoric
Yeah,
first 2 years.
that's amazing. It's amazing. Is Techstars, is it, was, I mean, I know you'd been through Techstars before, but
I
it's not the
had
typical
I
company that goes through Techstars, right?
no, I'm not. It was pretty funny. I love Techstars. I mentor. I'm a big part of the community. I love it out in Boulder. But Techstars, I did 2015 with the other company, and I really loved it. It was a very coming of age kind of summer for me, where I felt like, I'd been fired a few times in my career. I had moved around chasing success, and I finally found like, okay, yeah, I'm only making $1,600 a month pre-tax. I'm sleeping on couches. I'm doing the startup thing. I'm 25. I'm in the thick of it. I'm working, 20-hour days. Like, and I don't glorify hustle culture. I think that that shit's toxic. But I will say that there's something very cathartic about like wanting to work and show your worth and prove that you have what it takes, and then getting that opportunity to actually like hone in and really keep your nose down and just crush work for like 3 or 4 months. And that's what Techstars is just, you just crush work. You're totally focused on the task at hand. In 2019, we were just kind of, we just launched. We won Denver Startup Week 2018 in September, first place. Techstars was in the audience. They knew me. I was kind of like a known guy. I'd been through the program. We hadn't really like kept in touch too much, but like they knew, call this is Colin. He's reliable. We know him. He's not a crazy person. Well, wrong type of crazy.
Good crazy,
And
not
good
bad
crazy.
crazy. Yeah.
And so we had lunch after I won first place at Denver Startup Week, and they were like, would you apply? I was like, yeah, I'll apply. So I applied. And then I remember I was on the fence. They were like, I don't know if we should do, because we do software companies. We do, at that point, Web3 was really hot. And they were like, yeah, it's just really weird to think about having like a consumer brand in Techstars. And I told them, I was like, look, like I can't promise you that I'm gonna 100x like some of these other companies are pitching. But I'm a founder that that is going to give you his all. I'm going to put on a great show on demo day. I'm making more money than anybody else in the class right now. I guarantee you that. And I will probably be the first person to make 7 figures in the class with the business. And they liked that. They were like, it's, let's have a revenue generating company in the class for once. And so that's what ended up winning them over. And 2019 was, I'm just so grateful I did it before the pandemic. But that was also a very important summer for me. Had just gone through a really bad breakup. Was not enjoying my time in Colorado. Again, had gotten laid off from my last startup. And 2018 felt like a very hard year of work. And 2019 felt like I had dug my way out of that hole where I didn't really know what I was going to do next.
Awesome. So, like you said, meteoric growth initially, and then, but I think you alluded to earlier that you kind of hit roadblock with the pandemic.
Pandemic was brutal. I mean, it was both good because of the e-commerce explosion, but I mean, the supply chain crisis was just insane. And it's funny to watch it play out in politics and to watch it play out in the discourse in live time. And it's like people, in 2022 and 2023, what happened to prices? Went through the roof. Inflation. Well, I wish more people took an economics class, because if they did, they would know that inflation is a lagging indicator. And by the time that you notice inflation, all the causes are in the past. And it was really frustrating for me, just on a personal note, real quick, to try to explain this to people who just simply did not want to or could not have the capacity to listen, where they were like, what's being done right now to fix inflation? Like what, like who caused this year? Like what did, the Democrats or Joe Biden do or whatever? And I'm like, there was this thing in 2020 and 2021 called COVID that tripled the rate of freight, that made UPS and FedEx double their rates, that created the largest supply chain crisis where boats were piled up on the shore waiting to get into the port that didn't have any dock workers to unload the containers and get the items to the warehouses. Like you couldn't get a train, you couldn't get a truck, you couldn't get a container to save your life for months. My factory shut down for 75 days. And so I knew very well the causes of the inflation. It's economics 101. It was a supply shock. And so that hit us just as hard as it hit every, I mean, I would say harder. Like our COGS went up by 50%. Labor went up, shipping went up, freight went up,
Yeah, the
and then,
freight got crazy expensive there for a while. It was
well,
insane.
and we've paid 11% tariffs the whole time that I run the business. And India, Lyocell is a 11.4% tariff on the harmonized tariff schedule. A lot of people don't know what the harmonized tariff schedule is. Before this year, it was a really well-oiled machine, with like millions of different classifications for different goods. And so I happily paid my tariffs to Uncle Sam for the first, 6, 7 years of my business. And now this year, obviously, the trade war has completely blown up e-commerce. But the hard part about having a tariff on your goods is that if your cost goes up, so my cost goes up 50%, my 11% tariff is now on the higher cost of goods. So it's not, if my price goes up by $10, it's not just $10, it's actually another $1.40 because it's another 11%. So it's another $1.40. And so that was like very challenging because every dollar that went up was, another 14 cents, 11 cents. So yeah.
Did you
Tough
kept
times.
prices? You didn't change prices during this
We
time?
did change prices. We did testing. We used IntelliGems, which is a price testing tool that I love. I know the founders there. I've mentored them a little bit. Shout out to Adam and Drew over at IntelliGems. They helped me do a price testing strategy that allowed me to figure out, okay, I can raise prices on King and Cow King pretty exponentially without losing a lot of conversion because the price elasticity is there is much is much better. Whereas with Full, I couldn't raise prices by a dollar. Full, I'm actually thinking about running advertisements that say, 6 inches really matters in the bedroom, because Full and Queen are 6 inches apart, 60 inches versus 54. And if you have a full, that means that you have square footage that you can't, those 6 inches really matter. But and so that,
That's great.
yeah, and yeah, I know, I gotta turn that into an ad. That's just so funny. And so that really taught me that, like, oh wow, actually we lowered, counterintuitively, our full we lowered by $10, and we ended up having like a 50% increase in conversion rate, and then that ended up increasing revenue per visitor enough to offset that lower price of profitability. And whereas King, like, it didn't matter what the hell we charged for it. Like people who had King and wanted to buy expensive sheets, like they actually want your sheets to be more expensive. Like in some ways, like that's just pricing theory and psychology in terms of like, I don't want to buy the cheapest option or the second cheapest or the second. I want the best thing, and price is a signal for that. You know what I mean? So,
That's so interesting.
yeah.
Is it fundamental, even though you sell the same product, is it fundamental different audiences?
It's just it totally it's you're it's so interesting. The person who buys a full is just fundamentally different than the person who buys a King or a Cal King. And it's you're right, it's the same exact fabric, same exact luxury, same exact quality, but two totally different price tolerances.
Amazing. Amazing. I got to
Yeah,
check out
there one
IntelliGems.
Weird category. Yeah, IntelliGems is awesome for this. And you can do it by SKU. You can do, we did free shipping tests, we did paid shipping tests, we did different shipping prices, we did cross outs versus discounts versus codes, like very robust tool to use. And that was really helpful. And especially if you have like 200 SKUs like we had, like it's very helpful to like segment it by size, color, and our category is one of those categories where there are very different consumers depending on the size. Most categories aren't like that, like apparel and stuff. Like it's more about the fabric.
Yeah, super interesting. Thanks for sharing that. So I could talk to you for hours. This is time's gone too fast. But I wanted, congrats on all the success with Sheets and Giggles. It's amazing. But would you want to spend a couple minutes on your other business, Sheets
Oh
Resume?
yeah, sure. So I used to be a recruiter, like I alluded to. I love it. For the last, however many years since I've been a recruiter, 10, 11, 12 years, I've done resume reviews for friends, both paid and free. And I've done a lot of probably 100 of my friends and family resumes for free. And then maybe a few years ago, I know, like almost, I was like 7 years ago, actually. I wrote a big post on Reddit on one Saturday morning, my just randomly, where I was like, here's how to write a resume, and I was, and it just took off, and it ended up being the most popular resume advice on the internet. My resume has been downloaded 5 million times. It's helped so many people all over the world, totally free. And then over the last those 7 years, I've kept myself sharp by answering those questions that people have gotten rolled in, like, what about this? And I've always get interesting questions. People have really niche scenarios a lot. But my time as a recruiter really helped me to be able to explain to them what they should and shouldn't do in these scenarios. And so I built up this reputation answering probably over 10,000 questions over the 7 years in my spare time. About being like a resume resource on Reddit. And then in 20, I think 2023, started doing paid reviews because we just got so many requests for it, and I couldn't justify spending the time, for free. And plus, like, you don't put a value on something and people don't value it. So ended up doing the one-on-one reviews. Again, just endless demand, didn't have enough time for it. Started at 150, then raised my price to 200, then 250, then 300. And then I started getting sheepish, like raising my price to like 400, even though there were resume review people that were charging $1,000 or $800. I just didn't feel comfortable, and but I still wanted to raise my price because I needed to discourage all the volume of emails that I was getting from people. And I was working with my friend, my old colleague Nate, who was one of my recruiting colleagues, who has since become a software engineer. And he was doing these reviews with me on the side for fun, for side income, and just to help people. A few $1,000. Not it's not significant, but it's extra income. And one day, I was like a year and a half ago, he was like, "Hey, what if we?" It was about a year ago, actually. He's like, "What if we put an AI wrapper on this thing?" And I was like, yeah, like, but it has to be robust. It has to be like a real product. It can't just be like a GPT wrapper. And so we ended up spending like 4 months. When I say we, I mean he is the software engineer. Like, I just kind of PM'd it, right? I kind of like wrote my rules and my outlines and the training. And I really like, I wrote like 8 pages of rules, like detailed oriented rules, like on how to do a proper resume. And the AI output is so good, and the builder is so intuitive and beautiful and works so well. It's at sheetsresume.com. And we now have a resume builder, a cover letter generator, and the cover letter generator is totally free for everyone, unlimited usage. And then we have an AI interview practice tool that is awesome. And I trained that myself too. Like, I recorded myself doing a bunch of interview mocks with people. And then so it's like really like me. And then we also now just rolled out a smart jobs matching tool where while you're building your resume with us, our AI will find jobs across the internet that match your qualifications. So when you're done with the resi, we just say, "Hey, here's 20 jobs that you qualify for. Would you like to apply for them? And then we don't do the auto apply because I think that that creates a really bad environment for people all across the hiring industry. But we do take them to the website to apply. Then they have their fresh resume that we just built for them. We can write them a cover letter. You can practice your interview right there from your jobs dashboard. It's awesome, man. I'm so proud of what we've built at sheetsresume.com, and it's pretty much all in our spare time, like midnight to 2 a.m., some weekend
Because during
stuff.
this whole time you're running Sheets and Giggles, right? So working
It's
12 hours a
crazy.
day on that, probably.
It's crazy. I mean, I still spend time with my wife somehow. Like, I'm still a good uncle. I play baseball in the front yard with my nephew. I always seem to just have enough time and just eke out enough time for everything. I'm often late. That's my trade-off, is I'm often double booked and triple booked. But yeah, I'm obsessed with it. And we
That is
help
awesome.
thousands of people a month right now. And
And Sheets resume,
yeah.
the name just came from the sheet
Well,
business.
I'm the sheets guy, right? Like, that's there's the MyPillow guy, and for better and for worse, I'm the sheets guy, and that's what people call me. My podcast is called Sheet Talk. And so it's unrelated to Sheets and Giggles. It's a very different business, and it's corporately separate entity. But it is part of me in terms of, like, I'm Colin, I'm the sheets guy, and everything I do will be, probably for the rest of my life. If I ever run for office, I'll be Meet the Democrats pillow guy, you know what I mean? Like, it'll be, so yeah, that's the idea. So
That's awesome. Well, you mentioned sheetsresume.com, sheetsandgiggles.com, right? People want to find you.
sheetsgiggles.com, sheetsresume.com. I'm easy to find. LinkedIn, Colin McIntosh. I love mentoring companies. It's one of my favorite things I do. I was meeting with one of my mentees last night, helping him, and one of my buddies, starting a vending machine business. And I just love helping people with this stuff. It's the best.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you already shared a lot of good advice. Any final thoughts to our listeners that are starting a business or early in their journey?
I would say that, like, it's really hard. So, like, I didn't really the resume business has taught me that, like, it actually really helps to be passionate about something, like deeply passionate. Whereas the betting, I'm passionate about entrepreneurship, I'm passionate about owning my own business, about success, about making a quality product, the customer experience. Those are all things I'm obsessed with, like, certifiably neurotic. But I'm not, like, I always wanted to go into sleeping, but with the resume business, like, it speaks to me. It really does. And so I would say, like, maybe I've underrated that part. So maybe just the advice I can give is criticism to myself, where in the past I've said, it doesn't matter if you have a problem and a solution. It doesn't matter if, you've got to build a good business model. And that's true. But I think when the going gets tough, like when COVID happens, and, like, it's like, hey, we couldn't get into the port of Savannah, so we dropped your containers off in the Bahamas. Like, good luck. Like, go pick them up. Like, when shit like that happens, and it's like, it gets to be really exhausting, and it's scary, and it's like, it's your anxiety's through the roof, and you can't sleep. I think that having that, like, passion and that mission behind it actually does carry you through to the other side. And so I would ha highly recommend people really, like, find what they love doing. And then I would recommend that, like, we are put on this earth to help each other. We are each other. We are literally all divergent from the same common ancestor, which was not that long ago. And we are all each other, and the way you treat others is the way you treat yourself. And so I would highly recommend that people find something they can do in service of others, and they will love their days, and they will have less anxiety and more contentment as time goes on.
That's wonderful advice. I'm super impressed by your energy, by your wisdom, by your success. Thank you so much, Colin, for taking time to hang with us, and I'm sure our listeners are gonna love it. Thanks again.
Thanks, man. It was a fun conversation. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thank you. All righty, this is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur or you work in a company that creates new products and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to gemba.com and click on podcast, and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your post and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestion from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content to make sure you don't miss any episodes. Please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to gemba.com and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.